Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cast Cerberus. My name is Christian Corley. I'm joined by James McLean this week. And we're here to catch up on a few things that have been happening in the world of Doctor Who, which is a bit of a surprise, really, because we expected to be talking about Mind Warp. But we'll have to put that back to a later date on this occasion. James, we have been kind of filling the lack of Doctor Who events and news and new episode discussions and stuff with looking at older episodes for weeks and months. We've been doing this. We've looked at Silver Nemesis, we've looked at The Mysterious Planet, we've looked at the Daleks Master Plan, and so a few others as well. Ropes of Death. I like looking at old Doctor Who a lot more than I do looking at new Doctor Who these days. I'm almost feel as though classic Doctor Who has aged better than some of the more recent Doctor Who. I'm not talking like the Tudor stuff, but the Moffat stuff and the original RTD stuff. I feel more affectionate to it. Is that the same for you, or am I an unusual person?
I mean, annoyingly, yeah, it probably is the same for me as well. I mean, I'd like to take a contrary position, but I don't think it's anything to do with the show. I think it's just a subjective thing. I think you'll find people who grew up with David Tennant would have the same feeling to their era. I don't think it's necessarily a nostalgia. I think nostalgia underplays that it's about kind of what the show kind of means to you, what it formally means to you. So I don't think it's like a wistful, oh, I'm looking back and I remember how great it was watching it as a kid. There is a bit of that, I guess, but I think a lot of it is just that is, I mean, like for me, thinking about it, to be honest, the Doctor Who era for me in a lot of ways was the 90s. And putting the books aside, that was the time when you were collecting the videos, and there was a sort of a scarcity about it that you were filling, and that was exciting, and that became part of the pleasures of Doctor Who. So I think that is always, it's a bit like, and again, going back to old people talk, sticker albums, you know, and the like, where, you know, you'd be hunting for certain stickers and that became part of the pleasure. And I think that's why for a lot of us, the classic series has that pleasure, because it's a link to those sort of, because it feels precious in that way. I think that's why the new Doctor Who never feels particularly precious to me, not because I don't think it's any good, but because I can see it whenever I want. When it was on, I could pretty much see it whenever I wanted, because it was videos and DVD, everything was, you know, so much more accessible. So, you know, it's a bit like everything these days, is that because everything is so easily accessible and on demand, it loses its specialness because it becomes less scarce, doesn't it?
Scarcity adds value.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a leaf would be worth more than a pound coin if it was more scarce, and you know, that's the inherent value is a lot of the time about how scarce it is. So yeah, I think that's why old Doctor Who for us probably carries a lot of meaning. I think for me as well, and I think probably the same for you too. And again, the same for people with a tendency here as well. It's also a conduit to the nostalgia or the access to the time period. So you're watching it, and like I was thinking yesterday, I wouldn't mind watching Colony in Space, I think, again. Not because it's a great story, not because I have any love of John Pertwee. I think it's actually a pretty drab story. It's very pedestrian. But it's quirky to see how they sort of did those sets. And you know, you're sort of exploring the sort of world of the production and the people of the time who made it. And that becomes something special.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the last 25 years is quite samey in a lot of ways. There's not that much breakouts for me when I watch it, apart from perhaps regret, you know, feeling the sadness that social media took over the world and, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, 2000s do seem strangely a kind of time, despite the fact, you know, there was a lot of wars and problems going on. They feel more innocent in a weird way. So I can understand why people then might see the same. And I think I'm just going to keep talking today because I don't seem to be able to stop. But yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, you mentioned Panini sticker albums, and before we carry on talking about what we are going to talk about, did you ever complete a Panini sticker album?
Yeah, I think I did.
Can you name them?
I think I completed the Return of the Jedi one.
Oh, snap. So did I. First one I
Yeah.
completed, yeah.
I also, it's not a sticker album, but I did come again. I don't know why I'm fucking talking about this. Around the special editions, I think Doritos had those like Dorito discs of the Star Wars special
Oh, right.
edition.
Yeah.
I completed that as well. I remember
They
that.
had a
So.
name, didn't they? Like Tagos or
Oh yeah, I think you're right. I think they probably did.
something like that. I only completed two paninis. Not for want of trying, and inevitably I would get a football one because I was quite into football in the like late 80s, early 90s. But, and again, just like the fan gene, I suppose. And
Who did you support? Don't care. Carry on.
the only other one that I did complete was the Transformers
Oh, right. Yeah, I
collection,
vaguely remember
video
that
collection.
one.
Yeah. But they're the only ones. So I was going through some old stuff the other day, and I found that I've got an absolute ton of like just bits and bobs of Panini sticker albums. Like, so I've got like three Gary Linekers from Mexico 1986. I've got bits of Back to the Future and bits of Gremlins, and I've also got these kind of cereal pack inserts of that Val Kilmer movie, the fantasy one. What's that called? They spun it off
Oh,
into a TV series recently.
Willow.
Willow, yes, Willow. Yeah, I've got like little cereal box inserts from Willow. It's a
Did they
crazy.
spin it off into a TV series?
I think there was a TV series of.
Is there any evidence of it anymore? No, there
Oh, is it
isn't.
that one?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. No, they didn't.
It never happened. Yeah. But then again, I think in a weird way, in it's like a microcosm of what we're talking about. The Panini sticker albums were often that same sort of conduit that the TV shows were, because you didn't have access to the films in the same way in the 80s. We didn't get videos didn't become a big thing, to own until the late 80s. So when I was growing up, like my conduit into, say, Flash Gordon would be the Flash Gordon sticker album. Your conduit
Yeah, I got
into,
bits of that as well. Yeah.
and you'd be looking for stickers which had either angles or shots that were not familiar to you, and in a weird way, the sticker albums themselves would create a familiarity to certain scenes that didn't already exist, because they'd be the ones who were always in the trading playground, would be the same shot of, I think there was like one that springs to mind is the Empire Strikes Back sticker album, where there was a shot, it's quite a famous snap of Solo trying to kiss Leia with 3PO's arm coming into frame to try and stop him, and it was like a two. Sometimes, for those who don't know, the stickers would be of shots and they'd be in two parts, or sometimes three parts if you're
Or
unlucky,
four.
or four. So you had to collect them all, and you'd invariably, I'm sure they probably did this. Who knows? I'd love to look into this now. Did they deliberately print more of certain stickers than others, because certain ones
Yeah.
would always seem to be the ones that would come up in the trading or in the packets. So you'd end up finding one aspect of a shot would become more precious than others, because it'd be like the third or the fourth of the four parts of the picture would become the precious one. So it was a really weird conduit into the film space and into the sort of visual iconography of the film. They were interesting times. They didn't
Yeah.
do the football ones. But I did Flash. I remember being very young with Flash Gordon, and I remember my mum would take me to. We would take us past the shop, and we'd get a packet occasionally. But yeah,
Yeah, same
the
with me. I
sim.
usually we had a corner shop nearby and we'd like pass on the way home from town and pick up a little bag of sweets. The
But
ones that they
isn't
used to put on the scales in a packet of
it?
stickers.
But isn't this crazy? And again, I hate it because I hate generational talk because it pisses me off massively. But it is a truth. The differences in generations is incredible. That you think, I mean, like this week, one of my conundrums while I've had a bit of time off, I've been watching Spider-Noir, which
Oh,
is
right. Is it good?
which dropped on Prime. I've only watched one episode of it so far.
Okay.
Didn't get much further because they've dropped it in, and all the websites, of course, are enjoying this little bit of juicy article filler which is you can either watch it in black and white because it's meant to be a film noir version of Spider-Man, if people don't know, or you can watch it in I think they call it True Color, which is a sort of slightly unworldly version of color, the sort of thing you'd see in the 50s. So you can watch it, and if you've got on certain remotes, you can swap between the two. So I spent most of episode one stuck, unable to decide which of these two I watch. And I've been going backwards and forth, and I still cannot decide. It's become very frustrating. I've not watched episode two.
Oh
But the
dear.
point being, this is just, and we've said this a thousand times, there's just so much there. If you're a young person, you've got half term off and you've got a remote, the amount of things to watch at the moment, if you're anyone like us, as I say, I mean, I'm still trying to catch up with Daredevil. I'm naughtily rewatching Person of Interest because there's just no time. You shouldn't be rewatching stuff because there's so much out there. I've been interested in the recent Predator film. I've been watching, Young Sherlock. I was yesterday, for some reason, I started watching Deadpool and Wolverine again. It's just everything. Well, when we were kids, you would, a sticker album. You go to the shop to buy a small package of stickers. Where would you find time or interest in doing that now? Where would those stickers have any value unless they were not on those screens? So it's just such a crazy difference in. And again, it goes back to when our parents would sort of say, during, I don't know, the 50s, we only had, our bikes and Wild West genres, and that was it. It's just amazing the differences in how we all live.
Yes. Well, the other element of that is that because you do get a kind of an overlap between these things, don't you? So, for example, the shop that I mentioned was a raft shop, so it had been there for decades. It was a key part of the local community during the war, because that's where you would go to, taking your
What's a raft
ration.
shop?
Like a ration shop, basically, where you'd take stuff for ration. And I think it has some sort of association with one of the with just like supporting from the armed forces people or something like that. So
Oh,
anyone knows
okay.
exactly what a raft shop was, please let me know. I think it was RAAFT. And that shop had been there for decades. So, and th throughout the war, so it would, although my mum didn't grow up in where we live, there were shops like that in other parts, over in Whitby and things. So there is a, there is an overarching thing. Everything kind of filters into each part of that, doesn't it? And this is very, very tenuous and uncomfortable almost, link is trying to take me to Paradise Towers,
Okay.
Unlive the Multiverse, or Unlive the Multiverse. I'm not entirely sure on the pronunciation. I think it's Unlive the Multiverse, which is from Cutaway Comics. And I mention it in this sense because it comes with a load of extras and value-added material, which I was kind of a liking to collecting stickers and stuff. This is
I
from Cutaway
see.
Comics, which is obviously, we've talked to Gareth Cavanagh about Cutaway Comics previously in the past. I just wanted to highlight this because there's something very interesting about this, and I'm hoping to get Gareth on soon to talk about this in depth, okay? Because there's a particular element I want to talk about. The article about this is over on our Substack, on castorbis.substack.com. I'll put a link in the show notes, and you can find out all about this new production, which is a graphic novel and various extras. And there's a comic strip by Stephen Wyatt himself in there, which is the first comic strip he's written, and it's the first time he's really gone back to Paradise Towers. But there's this element to it as well. Cutaway Comics is launching an open artist competition this summer to find the artist for Scary Cat, which is Stephen Wyatt's strip. Now, I think this is really interesting, James, because this is something that we did before you joined Castorbis. This is something Brian and I did with the Time Leech strip. We did a competition with the help of John Freeman to find an artist. And I think this is really interesting and really cool. The other thing about it is the illustrator of the main strip is Silvano Beltramo, and his career kicked off in the same way through a competition. And I'm surprised this doesn't happen more these days. Really, that attitude, that whole angle. But also, I think as well, with what we're going to be talking about shortly, I do wonder if the kind of, I don't want to say like the time has come for Gareth Cavanagh's vast empire of productions of Doctor Who spin-off material, but I do feel as though that maybe there is a gaping chasm in the world of Doctor Who at the moment, and this is perfectly timed.
I mean, I think for the first part, I think the reason it doesn't, we don't tend to see it happen through comics in that way is, again, I've not seen, it depends on the artist, but comic art is one of the most difficult forms of art there is. You know, you've got to be able to draw anything from any angle in a collective space, in a sequential space, which makes narrative sense, that follows certain rules as well that Western audiences will anticipate in terms of that sequential space. And also, it's got to have an aesthetic style which is unique, interesting, and consistent. That is incredibly difficult. And
And
it's
relatively
also,
quickly as well.
and relatively quickly and frequently, relatively for very low pay for the amount of work you're doing, it's low pay. So to get all that, you tend to have to be a fairly professionalized person anyway, who is unlikely to go for competitions. Not always. I think that's the key thing to say here, not always. And they tend to be people who are already looking in a professional way at the field. That doesn't mean they're looking down at those spaces. It means that they are trying to make money and they don't have time to put that amount of effort into something which isn't going to pay and is not going to have even the prestige. And I don't mean that in a rude way. I mean, in terms of a market prestige, you know, people who might hire you might not, or are less likely to see that than they'd be more likely to see something on a more commercially driven project. So I think those are kind of the reasons why it doesn't really happen. But I think it can be a good, and now we're in a space where, you know, what was prestige, you know, what the space between, let's call it professional and amateur, has now collided, has merged. You know, there's a middle ground. People aren't necessarily just expect going to the BBC for stuff. They are more mobile, and that's great and that's cool and it's great for Cutaway as well. But I think it's an interesting question. But I think that is why we don't tend to see it. And even when comic artists do actually get their first gig, most of the time, they still ain't that great. There's very few examples I can think of who kind of hit the ground running in the same way that they would end up being. So I'm thinking back to like Henry Flint, who's a British comic artist who eventually went to the States, as they all do, and has done great work. His art, his early stuff is not dis too dissimilar to the style he ended up with. There's a few like that, but initially it's never that great because it takes a while to, because it's, as I say, it's a craft to actually find your style, find your voice and the skill to build and sustain that. But yeah, it's a really interesting topic. And you know, Cusway's got some, as well as these new artists, has obviously got lots of quite classic names attached to their library as well. So
Which you can find all about more at cutawaycomics.co.uk. So we're going to move on now to talk about some recent things related to Doctor Who as it is produced now. First of all, last week we ran out of time. We were going to talk about the Saturday Night Live thing. So if, in case you don't know, Shuti Gatwa hosted Saturday Night Live UK. Now, I wasn't sure about this, whether it was like the American one or the British one, because I'd forgotten the British one had started. Because it kind of it came along with a big fanfare and a really bad trailer. Then it turned out to be quite good, and then there was the next episode, and then it kind of tailed off. This feels like the kind of like a mid-season kind of tentpole episode almost in Doctor Who terms. So he did the traditional kind of star guest monologue thing, and he says initially, "I'm so lucky. I've had so many fantastic roles in my career. Millions of you watched me as Eric in Sex Education. Then about 12 of you watched me in Doctor Who. Hey, maybe that's why I kept crying. Joking aside, it was genuinely a magical role. In fact, it was the first time my parents were truly proud of my career. When I told them I got the part, they said, 'Finally, a doctor in the family.'" It's all pedestrian comedy-wise. "Even though I have since regenerated into Billy Piper," and then he looks at the side camera and says, I don't understand it either." And then carries on and says, "I still love Doctor Who and I got to meet so many crazy characters." Now, it's a nice thing to have. I'm a big fan of comedians or actors and stars doing these kind of monologues, but although I often find sometimes I get a bit sanitized or whatever with the main Saturday Night Live. So more recent ones I haven't tended to pay that much attention to, and I don't bother with the scripts and with the sketches and stuff, but I do. Ooh. got the mic. I do enjoy watching people take the mickey out of themselves in that way. But it's the whole thing, though, it is very much a Doctor Who played down. I'm not saying anything about it, but let's take the mickey out of it. And that does feel a bit kind of 1990s to me, taking the mickey out of Doctor Who. That's the sort of thing that would really have got my goat 30 years ago, you know?
But then it only been written by the Saturday Night Live writers team,
Yeah.
who will be playing to sort of general discourses around Doctor at the
Exactly, yeah.
moment. Yeah.
Exactly, precisely. And that's the point, isn't it? That is the general discourse around Doctor Who at the moment. And when we feed that into our next major topic of the week, which is something that we haven't had in a long time, rumours suggest this is reported via the Doctor Who Companion, who've done a good job in kind of presenting this in a calm way, unlike some outlets. Rumours suggest the next series of Doctor Who, including the Christmas special, has been cancelled. The Sun reported this initially, and then it was repeated on other sites. It's also been reported by the Radio Times. Now, that isn't as significant as it sounds because Radio Times isn't actually owned by the BBC. I think it's, I want to say immediate, but I might be wrong. It might be a different publisher altogether, but it's not owned by the BBC. It's obviously licensed. An unnamed insider told The Sun, despite reassurances that the show will be back on our screens with a new series, there's been no confirmation from execs about when that will be. And they proudly announced that the Doctor will be making a comeback in this year's Christmas special. Now, with less than 7 months to go, that looks like it's hanging in the balance too. The problem is that they have found it difficult to find anyone who'll take on the part of the 16th Time Lord, partly because it now feels like a role that comes with all the baggage of the most recent series. There are fears that even if they do manage to pull something together, it is going to be a poor cousin to previous Christmas specials, which have always been adored by fans. Now, before I bring James in, number one, not all Christmas specials have been adored by fans. That one with the talking trees was not adored by fans. Number two, I think something like 70% of the Doctor Who Christmas specials since 2005 have been recorded by now or around now. Only a small proportion of them have been recorded September to October. That includes the 2013 Christmas special as well. So, where do you think we are with this, James?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you're right, they are, but recording time, you've still got the pre-production period.
Yeah.
And if they are genuinely having issues, if there is like a paralysis, I mean, there's bits of it I don't buy. I mean, it comes from a tabloid source, and that's always a hard one because tabloids can sometimes come up with truths. Sometimes unnamed sources can be,
Some bloke on
it's
YouTube.
exactly it's a powerful door to hide your source behind. You can't tell the viability of that source. Yeah, and it feels like the sort of there's things in here which I don't know, it's hard to say. I don't feel it would be hard to find a doctor.
No, I
I
don't.
feel this idea that there would be no one who would take on the baggage just feels like that feels like a person who doesn't understand industry. I don't
Yeah.
believe that. Whether they can find the right, I could understand if there's certain people they wanted who they couldn't get because it does have baggage if you're at a certain level and you don't want to take that on.
Yeah.
I could understand. So again, it depends. It's hard to unpack what it's actually saying. I would be very surprised if, I mean, because it was, as far as I'm aware, it was given the go ahead. Given that, as far as I'm aware, the Christmas special is still considered an extremely important point for the. I can't believe there would sort of be a sort of sense of cancelling something like this because the, again, the prestige or the lack of, or the sort of damage it would do to your reputation to have one of your shows. It's like I was going to go with football, but I don't understand football, so maybe football's not a good one to go by. But basically, you don't want vulnerability within your corporation in public. You don't want to feel, if you have to actually remove
Sure.
something, it shows, it's like politics, I guess. Politics is the best space, isn't it? Sometimes, you're aware that, like at the moment and probably for the next various parties over the next few years, changing leaders is a danger for parties because parties feel that it shows a vulnerability in their strength as a party if they're suddenly having to change their leader. And if, Doctor Who
Sure.
is one of their leader brands for their prestige and their global value, cancelling and showing uncertainty in it doesn't make you look good. So I would be very surprised if they would go down that route unless they really, really had to. And again, like I said, as they said proudly and loudly last year that it'd be back for Christmas, it feels very weird for them to go against that. But then, at the same time, as we've said for the last 2, 3 years, we are in an era of uncertainty and saturation and suffocation of content. It does change the playing field dramatically. And maybe, I don't know how that works internally for someone like the BBC who's trying to find its. Still trying to find its place in this madness of content. So maybe there is truth. Maybe there is a general, fear, maybe from the BBC rather than the actual production, rather than Bad Wolf, that it won't come together or it won't come together well. That the wrong person will be cast. Those things could be true. I could imagine the BBC being very worried about that, and quite rightly so. Whether that's what Bad Wolf's doing at the moment. Doesn't feel like that would be the case. I feel kind of they would be just moving on, but that might be, if there's a half truth in this, maybe that's the half truth. The BBC is nervous about Doctor Who, about what it's going to look like and who's going to be in it. The question about Piper, again, that will depend, I guess, if they've moved their schedules, because if they cast her at the back end and then they agreed to go with the Christmas with her, I'm assuming that they'd have actually found a point where there'd have been agreement to when they would shoot. And for them to have missed that, which can sometimes happen. But then, as you say, generally speaking, it tends to be a later time anyway. So it wouldn't have, would it have happened by now? I don't know. Well, yeah, sometimes they do, don't they? Sometimes they shoot around this time for Christmas. I can't, I'm, my brain's not good with the shooting schedules. That's more your space.
Sometimes, yeah.
I don't know. It's
Yes.
and we live in a world where it's an information economy, isn't it? And this is information. This is economy to a certain fan base for websites. And no disrespect to Doctor Who Companion, but Doctor Who websites, especially in science fiction websites and YouTube content creators, and this stuff keeps their stuff alive. So. We're invariably going to see. I would have been very surprised if we'd not had these sort of rumors by this point anyway, because the information economy needs information to keep itself afloat. It needs tidbits. It needs arguments. It needs topics. And here we have one. Would Tennant come back and save it again? I don't think he would. I don't mean that in a rude way. I just don't think he would. I think it would feel very weird for his brand that every time Doctor Who is having to do something difficult, he comes in to fill the gap. I don't know. Maybe he would. Be fine if
Yeah,
he did, but it just
it's
feels,
difficult
it
to
feels, yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I'd have thought if they were having worries, and this is why I'm a little cautious about this article, the way things are going at the moment, you'd be going. Well, we're in a position now where we can take Doctor in whatever direction we want. As we've said before, we could spend an era just stunt casting for the next few years, and just regenerate or have stories with different doctors in, ad hoc through the next few years, and we just see what sticks and what doesn't. And if we get one, almost like a series of sort of like back doors, and just let them, you bring in, I don't know. The last of the Chuckle Brothers to be the doctor. If that works, great. We'll have another one with him. If it doesn't, we'll go and get someone else. They could just do it like that. You see what I mean? I mean that would kind of work. You'd have that each time it would come on, people would watch because they'd be interested to see what this new doctor would be like. And you could do that for a few years. Each episode is a different doctor. Why not? You've got an Nth Doctor thing. There's ways to do this, which doesn't mean you have to be absolutely terrified. And maybe that's part of the problem. This is the BBC and maybe Bad Wolf, or maybe the world is still thinking of Doctor Who in broadcasting terms. And we live in a world, and to be fair to Davis, he was kind of setting this up but never really did the follow through. We have a multiverse world now. Everything is a multiverse. I'm playing Starfield at the moment, multiverse. If you play, Marvel, multiverse. Everything is about DC, multiverse. So it means you can just do whatever iterations you want. So, and maybe that's the way to go forward. We don't have to go through the thought like, okay, who's going to run this series for the next 3 years as the lead actor and be thinking about doing, like a 12 episode or 8 episode season per year. You can get away from that format if you're not sure how it works and try something different. And I wouldn't be surprised if those conversations are being had.
I know you're not a fan of talking about potential actors for Doctor Who and who might do it and who might not do it. And you're, but there's the David Tennant thing. There's also the Billy Piper thing, obviously, which is kind of staring everyone in the face. And I understood that she was unavailable for a particular period of this year, from reports I'd read. And from a similar angle, I'd also read that people who claim to be part of the production or had been previously part of the production have been contracted to work in like the first portion of 2026. And that hasn't happened either. So there's, I know that there's an angle to this that actually this is all just like, talking in a vacuum. No one actually knows because maybe it's actually already been done and it's all been recorded on a closed set, which wouldn't be completely unusual because they've done closed set stuff before and surprised viewers.
It's hard to unpack. I don't know. I would have thought if there was even a closed set that had been talk about it being in production. So that does seem unlikely, but still possible. It depends on how much. Well, it's an interesting thing, isn't there? Is it's like there's a question about has the production occurred in any way whatsoever? And then there's also a question of is Piper involved in that? And there's nothing to say, there's no argument that Piper is massively involved in the Christmas special. We just assume that she is. So, I mean, again, that could have just been a bit of fun stunt casting at the end and either starts or has some relevance to the Christmas special, but not as big as people think. I don't know. It's, again, this is why I kind of hate this period because speculation fuels information economies, but it also takes them nowhere. It's a drive to nowhere, which is a particularly good metaphor, which I rather quite like. It fuels our cars, but our cars have got no destination, and that's the problem with these sort of news reports. They don't.
It's an electric vehicle that's conked out of juice on the motorway between two recharge points.
I don't know. I think it's more like it's like petrol because it just feels like we're digging up old ways, old arguments and questions. How many years have we had is Doctor Who finished? Which is essentially the nub of this piece. Is it over really? Have they screwed up? And I think fandoms like this in particular, because there is a very strong sense of fandom in particular, which feels that Doctor Who has been ruined and Doctor Who has been destroyed, and thus to see it struggle now kind of validates that
But I
belief.
mean, maybe that is something that they have kind of inbuilt, and maybe I have it as well. I don't know. There's maybe something like that underlying 1989 fear, birth of. But at the same time, that doesn't exist most of the time. When a Doctor Who fan knows that everyone's watching Doctor Who, that's nowhere to be found. But as soon as there's like the implication or the facts based on our viewing figures. And I don't want to put any unnecessary context to those in the modern landscape. But if you then marry that off with like how Doctor Who seems to have slightly comedic, silly vibe these days, which you didn't really have 20 years ago, there is a feeling that people aren't watching Doctor Who. Doctor Who fans get inevitably heckles are up, and then they start getting concerned about it. Then this things starts to snowball, doesn't it?
But then it's like with all fandoms, isn't it? Popularity is often conflicted with ownership. And as soon as something becomes popular, it no longer becomes theirs. And when it's no longer becomes theirs, it no longer becomes the thing. And then they start fighting the new thing that it is. I mean, Star Wars is a great example of that. Doctor Who has a similar issue. In a weird way, you'd think you could, in an alternative, more positive universe, the fact that Doctor Who was there was an agreement with Disney to pick it up and to see it globally should have been like a massive sing-song moment for Doctor Who fans, but it wasn't. It was, a fear of America, a fear of it being Disneyfied and Mickey Moused, which doesn't happen. To me, that series, those Shooting Gatwood series, smelt far more of Russell T. Davis than it did of Disney to me. You can see there might be a bit of an alignment in some ways of those sort of angles, but that to me felt like Davis. And these days, kind of what is Disney? I mean, I said, yeah, I was watching Deadpool and Wolverine on Disney Plus the other day, and that is just so anti Mickey Mouse, the ears or whatever these lines that fans like to put up. It's commerce, it's commercial. They don't, Disney doesn't have that same sort of attitude as it did have in the 90s. It's very specific about it's, what could be seen and couldn't be seen. So yeah, it does feel like, again, one of those sort of kind of fairly negative Doctor Who articles, which goes out to an information economy of fan economists, or no, not economists, fan consumers who are looking for tasty articles that kind of suggest that they were right all along. And Doctor Who has gone, again, it's like football and managers, isn't it?
Oh,
Football,
God, yeah.
the team does well, everyone, so, but the team does badly. The manager is there for it's one of those weird things. I think the other interesting thing with Doctor Who, which I could see being an in, if it does carry on, thinking about politics, there's this conversation at the moment with politics that, regardless of the party, you kind of got like 2 years, and then media will push. And because again, this information's needed, this information economy, everything will sort of get to a point where that person in charge has to leave because everyone hates them. It's not that they're doing whether they're doing a good job or bad job. It's about everyone just doesn't like them, and that regardless of your party seems to be the way. Is that kind of where things like Doctor Who's going to go? You've got a certain amount of time to prove yourself as a showrunner, and if you do not prove it in the right way, your time is limited. The kickback. To the point where, as you say, like with Saturday Night Live, that's his speech. His look at Doctor Who, how rubbish my era was, because you will say it was. And it's like it wasn't rubbish. It was beautifully put together in terms of like production values. It was well cast. There were stories which I didn't enjoy. There were stories where you can clearly see the production struggled for various reasons, like Shooty leaving. But it was a very good show still. It was a very good, unique British show. But yeah, the way that's talked about now is as if it was like no one watched it, which isn't true, that no one liked it, which again isn't true. And how we should forget about it. And again, as you say, that goes back to the 90s. Now people are talking about McCoy. And that was exactly that same thing. You'd see people in fan circles saying, well, maybe McCoy era didn't happen. Maybe everything since Tom Baker's death didn't happen, because the whole Nathan Turner era was considered like a bad misstep as well. So you're right. It's interesting how you can see these like reflections of the past in the discourse of the day.
I've noticed a reference to Rusty Davies's current series of interviews about his new show. What do you think it's called? Tiptoe or Tip Top? Tiptoe, I think. And he's getting a lot of questions about Doctor Who, and he doesn't want to talk about Doctor Who. He wants to be talking about the other thing, which is not ideal, is it really? If there's all these questions about show B, and you're there to talk about show A, then that's not a good sign for both shows, really.
Well, I think again, it shows that in the information economy, Doctor Who still has legs, as it did in the 90s, which is again the parallel. I know the BBC had kind of washed its hands, but it was kind of ignoring that there was a massive grassroots interest in it, that the show was still in the lexicon of television history. It was still important. It rose to having the McGann era film as well, and then eventually came back into a highly popular show. So I think the notion that Doctor Who is dead is again a proof that in the same as the 90s, it isn't. It's just the question is, and it was the same in the 90s, what form would it come back in? And the form it came back in was not 20-minute episodes, four-parters, as it used to be. It had changed. And the Doctor was more of a romantic character. The show was more tongue-in-cheek, slightly more Americanized in its format. I just don't think we know at the moment. I don't think the BBC knows. I don't think Davis knows. And I think Shooty's era's problem was it was Davis trying to tap into a younger audience vibe and probably not managing it because that younger
No.
audience wasn't there to pick it up. And everyone else didn't enjoy it because it didn't really speak to what they were looking for. So I think, yeah, we can look back and go, it was a miss. There were probably some missteps in tone, but maybe those missteps are because, like we keep saying, no one knows what lands anymore. Where's your audience? Who is your audience? I genuinely don't know for that show. But I think, as we've said for many years, maybe the point is it has to pick its audience, but then it's got to pick its right audience. But is its audience like 40, 30 to 60-year-olds? Is that really the audience? Is that what they should be catering for? And is that possible? Is it possible to cater for 2005 fans and 20th century fans? Are they? I'm not sure.
Well, when they brought Doctor Who back in 2005, the big thing was that they were pitching to a family audience, which no other show was doing at the time. That seems like an approach that's worked previously. So
But that doesn't
it's
exist
possibly
anymore.
but that's what they said 20 years ago, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but to some degree, yeah, no, that's true. You do get there are very limited shows which you would say carry family audience ship these days, especially on
Largely variety shows,
linear,
I
largely
think.
variety shows. You might things like Gogglebox might still do it. Traitors has been a hit in that sense, but very few are family shows anymore. So it's not just.
So it's about format then, isn't it? It's because, and we've said this m multiple times as well over the years, that Doctor Who's format has really not changed significantly since 2005. In the majority of seasons since, it's been the Doctor and female companion. Aside from the Chibnall portion, and even then, a lot of that was basically Doctor and female companion, while the other two went off and did something else. So, there is that element to it. It's revising the format in a significant way would seem to be the starting point, surely.
I suppose the only way, I think the way to carry family watches now is probably, and I could be wrong on this is just off the top of my head, is through event television. Because that seems to be the way. Regular television is hard to find a regular family audience who will find that spot. But if it's event television, I think family audiences are more likely to find that spot. So I'm thinking like Traitors. And event television can be regular, but somehow it's got to be event. And how do you make it event? How do you make it something that people go to because it's got a buzz around it that it feels like it's something worth watching at that moment in time? Water coolery. I think that's where Doctor Who's struggling to find. I mean, again, we've said before, is it like the Knives Out franchise? Is that the way to do it, where it is, like a movie length drop every now and then, and it gets a bit
Well,
of a
that's the thing,
buzz.
isn't it? It's almost because they were talking about doing that exact thing 18 years ago. And so they knew the direction of travel, and then they've seen the direction of travel between then and now. And yet it does feel like there is an inertia to it all, which takes us back to the late 80s, where there was a massive inertia within the BBC about Doctor Who, and it was largely a negative thing. Whereas now it seems to be something they want to make, but they don't seem to know how to make it.
But the inertia is still there, isn't it? I mean, you see, I think if you watch Traitors is the funniest example of some of that inertia, because you'll have the celebrity traitors I'm talking about. You'll have 95% of them will be established linear TV or film people. And then you'll have one person who's like a content creator or YouTube influencer. And of course, they get wiped out within the first round because traitors is about a certain amount of what you who you feel you can trust. And a load of people who know everyone within the circuit and feel that they're part of the same established industry will naturally trust each other more than the outlier, unfortunately, which is so the point being, even in that space where you think about how much non-linear stuff is watched by young people these days, how the as we've said this before, up until like 2 years ago, Mr. Beast was not even mentioned on linear television at all, as if it didn't exist, despite him being one of the biggest influential content creators globally. He was just not mentioned, and we can still and to me that is the inertia that we're feeling. This is the it's not really that the BBC and linear is still struggling, has been fighting to find its space against VOD. And even though iPlayer has been a very good successful middle ground, iPlayer is still about the old school, isn't it? It's still about old school. It's not about, and I'll be honest, I don't want them to. I think content creation, I think there's a lot of issues there. I think we're going to see bigger issues that are going to come up in terms of I was listening to Osman's podcast the other day, and I thought he was quite right. He's sort of saying certain issues in reality television at the moment. What's going to happen when we've got so many shows now popping up in content as YouTube, which do not have the duty of care and the procedure that the BBC and linear television have, that the outcome of their reality TV shows could be quite disastrous if you don't have those. And even when you do, it can be disastrous, as has been recently evidenced. It's a wild west that I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm not saying the BBC should be trying to leap into that, but ultimately you can't pretend it doesn't exist. And I feel that's the
No.
problem, isn't it? You're trying to be, as you say, something of the past in the present, when the present doesn't really have a space for you. And we've said this a thousand times before. Doctor Who is almost like is almost like the embodiment of that problem. It is a show made for broadcast, for broad audiences, for family audiences, for that just doesn't exist anymore, that doesn't have its secular nature of older people growing up, they're introducing their children to the show, their children becoming the fans and perpetuating the show. Doesn't exist anymore. That's been broken. So where does this show go now? And that is the hard thing. That's, for Davis's faults with Shoot His Era, that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to revitalize that circle again, bring the young people into the show to give it its longevity. And I don't think it worked.
No, I don't think it works either.
So yeah, so does it end up having to be like, okay, this is really a show for older people for now? Is it like doing a Knives Out thing where it's a kind of like a spooky-ish, not low budget, but not massive high budget show which pops up and does different genre takes with, so say, different doctors playing the part, and it does that for a few years and sees if it just carries its landmark for the BBC in a sort of slightly different format. But if the format's not working at the moment, you've got to change it. You've got to try something different.
I was scrolling through our Cast Obras YouTube channel where a lot of these now go out. And there's a video of me talking to my son in 2017. So he's just about to be six, or he's still five and a bit. And it's the day or the day after Jodie Whittaker's announcement as Doctor. And in the video, he finds it, because he's a little boy, he finds it slightly ridiculous that the Doctor's going to become a woman. Now, over the course of the following 3 years, certainly the first two seasons, I'm not sure if he watched Flux, he really enjoyed Jodie's Doctor. Okay. But he watched Space Babies, I think, and didn't watch any more. I think he may have tried watching another one later on, actually. But he just couldn't, he didn't feel like it was a show that he wanted to watch, that it didn't feel like he was watching Doctor Who. And I do wonder, I mean, I've mentioned my nieces previously who grew up with Tennant and Matt Smith, and they were turned off by Peter Capaldi. And I know this happens, a lead in a long-running TV show, or where the lead actor changes, or the focus changes to another actor, maybe in the case of a soap opera or whatever, and people stop watching for time, whatever. These things do happen inevitably. But the fact that he was kind of, he was very partially my influence, although it's not really affected his twin sister. He enjoyed watching Doctor Who, and then he stopped enjoying it. And as far as I'm aware, he doesn't know anyone who watches Doctor Who or even watched Doctor Who when he was younger as well. So that does suggest that maybe this isn't purely Russell T Davies' problem. It's something that's
No.
been around a little longer.
No, but I think Russell T Davies was the first one to actually try and attack it by refocusing it towards having a younger energy. As we've said,
Yeah.
it was a certain Stranger Things, a Wednesday, sort of quirky fantasy, which was playing well with kids on Netflix platform. Felt like he was, I think he was tapping more of that than anything Disney. It didn't feel Disneyfied to me. It felt Netflixified. And and again, I think it didn't work for various reasons. I think maybe, it was a political show, and politics now is very polarizing. So unless you're very lucky to have a show which both sides of your political spectrum think they own it, like Star Wars, you lose a lot of your audience if it feels now overtly political. Now, Doctor Who's always been political, so I'm not saying it shouldn't, but I'm just saying, if it's now considered like it was considered woke or whatever, that you will lose audience as soon as that's attached to it. So it's a political show which has issues for it. It was aiming at kid. It was aiming at a youth audience, which perhaps there's just too much there for it to really find its feet with them. It was alienating older audiences who were not feeling that it was finding its feet. Actually, to be honest, I think that so much of that is just rubbish. I just think a lot of it is it's just a really, really busy market for all ages. And it just is a, it's nowadays it's a TV show. And for people like us and like and for your son, he'd seen so much of the same sort of thing. And then to see the same sort of thing again, but with a sort of angle which just was just not vibing. I didn't vibe with that episode either. I was My first time, I was like, I just want to switch this off. You're in a bad space, and we see it across. I mean, again, it goes back to Saturday Night Live, doesn't it? Go back to begin the conversation. As you say, that was absolutely considered to be a massive mistake, to the point where I think they had like, I think what's it, they'd commissioned six episodes, and then it started doing well, and they pulled it to eight. They were not anticipating it to go well,
No.
and it to be good. And again, it just shows how we just, it's so hard for both audiences and creators to come into the right space at the right time to create the right energy to make something work. Because everyone wants something different, I guess. And again, that's the other problem with Doctor Who, is Doctor Who is all about always doing something different. And that, how do you, Space Babies is an example of it, isn't it? Space Babies is an example of it trying to do something different, which so many shows don't try and do. Star Trek's Strange New Worlds did its musical episode, but apart from that, you went and you got the same thing each week. People kind of want that. Doctor Who has always deliberately tried to do something different, but people don't want different, they want the same. And unfortunately, different audiences want different sames. So I don't know. I feel like this podcast has just left us on this, like, this perpetual brain teaser where there's just no answer to it. Unless the show manages to find it, and I'll be amazed if it does. That'd be incredible, because I'd just love to see how do you make it work when everything doesn't work. Where, we look at The Mandalorian at the moment in cinemas, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm sure it's perfectly fine, but is being absolutely slammed for being more of the same, or I don't, I just, it's just, how do you survive? How do you, when it's so expensive, how do you make stuff in this climate? And you've got so much competition. And we keep saying that. I'm going to say it again to your listener, and in case you haven't really, you've not heard me say it before, which is crazy if you haven't. But when we said Doctor Who was big, its biggest competitor was Primeval. Primeval, that was it. That was the only thing on the UK television that was kind of in its same ballpark. Nothing else. And eventually they just had to put it against sort of popular entertainment shows like Ant and Dec, because that was the nearest thing they could find to challenge it. Imagine that now. You've got multiple platforms with similar content, all dropping stuff. Every month there's a new thing coming on that people to look forward to. How do you exist in that space? How does Doctor Who exist? I mean, do you think about Doctor Who much outside of this? I don't. I mean,
Are you talking to me?
yeah,
All right,
or
I'm
the
sure you're
listener.
still talking to the listener.
Well, the
Do I
listeners
think about
are
Doctor
likely
Who?
to respond.
That's a fair point, yeah. I don't think about Doctor Who an awful lot. I'm mostly thinking about old video games, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes something will pop into my head and I'll play around on this thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it doesn't, because
This thing.
exactly.
Sorry.
20 years ago, and you know this, I mean, I was talking to Philip about this relatively recently, how running a website just kind of like take over your life somewhat. So there was a period when I was constantly thinking about Doctor Who, and it
Yeah.
probably was kind of overly all consuming, and it was nice to have a kind of like a some form of break away from having to do all of that sort of thing. And all of that time, there's this like process of what's happening, what happens next, where does it go? And we talked about a lot of this stuff in the past. So I don't want to go too deep into that. But now I'm not thinking about Doctor Who. No, I just might fancy, you know, one might pop into my head, or I might see a lovely recolorization by and restoration by Clayton Hickman on social media and think, beautiful job, Clayton. And that might make me think about that particular episode. He's recently restored the photo caption backdrops from the Doctor's garage workshop in Inferno.
Oh yeah.
And they look absolutely stunning. So, you know, so I'd think about Inferno for a bit. But like generally speaking, no, I don't think about Doctor Who particularly at all. I probably think about Doctor Who video games more than I think about Doctor Who.
No, I don't have to think about it so much. I'm playing either video games or, like I said, you just look across the gamut of stuff on to watch. I'd like to watch an old episode of Mindra. I don't have time. I've been watching Person of Interest, which I don't have time to watch. There's, as I said, Young Sherlock, there's Darth Maul, there's Predator, there's new Scrubs, there's new Malcolm in the Middle, there's new on Netflix there's a thousand good shows as well. None of them are springing to mind. That's before you even look at, what they've got on HBO now or what's on Apple Plus. You've got Severance returning soon. You've got Ted Lasso there returning soon. You say we've got
House of the Dragon
Mandalorian in the
returning
screens,
soon.
House of the Dragon, Rings of Power coming back in the winter time. There's just so much stuff. Where is the time to have that focus
So literally
on?
the only time I think about Doctor is when we're preparing these
Well,
and if we're going to.
exactly. That's exactly my point. That's where I feel like that's not out of any disrespect to it.
No.
I still think it's a good show. I think it's an incredible show. I think its longevity is amazing. I would, if I didn't have so much to watch, this is my point. If I was back in 2007, yeah, I would have probably have watched, rewatched some of Shooties again, or might have rewatched some of Jodie's again. I just don't have, there's just no space to do that.
No.
So
No, if you want
where
to
does it
like
exist?
eat and drink and, you know, perform your ablutions with some sort of semblance of dignity and cleanliness, there's no time to watch everything, is
No,
there?
this is it. And so stuff gets lost until it becomes important, which again goes back to it becoming event TV. Because people will find time to watch Knives Out because they know other people will have watched it. They know it's an hour and a half. Good Omens 3, watched that last night, which was interesting again for various reasons. But it comes back to what we were saying last week about the whole idea that these days 22-minute episodes for Doctor Who would probably be its optimum level, or even less. And that's a weird space to be in because I could watch Good Omens 3 because it was like an hour and a half rather than like an 8-episode long series. It probably would have been if other things hadn't occurred. So yeah, that's the world we live in. So it does annoy me going back to SNL that, that is the way that they articulate his dialogue because it feels disingenuous to that TV show. It feels disingenuous to him as well. I think it annoys me a lot when the lead actor who carries that show on their shoulders, whether, and I know they've agreed to do that, that's part of the contract, But that's a lot. And then you have to do a year later, 2 years later, you have to do a bit, which is about sort of saying how that show wasn't popular when you were running it as part of a joke. I just kind of, I kind of feel like, ah, joke on, mate. That's just feels unfair, especially when the show is just, it's not like it was before. And yet it just feels like culture just assumes that we are still in 2007 for Doctor Who, and look how it's performing. It's terrible. 2006 was amazing. 2007, it's not doing anything right. It's yeah, very frustrating. Poor old shooting.
Okay. Well, we're going to round it off there. Is that normally how I say these things? I don't know. We're going to round it off there. We're going to round it up there. What do I normally say at this point?
I don't know. I don't tend to listen to you that much, to be honest. It's normally my own
So
voice going on and on and on.
we're going to conclude things there.
That sounds all
And
right.
yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it? We'll conclude this week's podcast there. If you've
Why
any
not?
thoughts on anything, yeah, if you've any thoughts on anything we've discussed, do let us know, particularly if you can remember the meaning of a raft shop and anything that James has said. If that, if you have any strong thoughts about the Shudi's appearance on Saturday Night Live, and yeah, I mean, there's also that fact that he's kind of talked down the TV show that lots of people worked on and put a lot of work and effort into there, from some angles that could be viewed as being that. And what
And
you
he
think is
put a lot
happening,
of work into as
and
well.
he did as well, yeah. And if you've any thoughts on what's happening in the big gaping chasm of Doctor Who at the moment, do let us know that as well. You will find this podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Podcast, Apple Podcasts, and on our Substack and on Patreon as well, where you'll also find additional material and exclusive material, interviews, and other archive drops from the old days of Cast Erebus. We'll be back with a new podcast soon. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.